The Blind Californian Quarterly Magazine of the California Council of the Blind, Winter 2011, Volume 55, Number 1, published in Braille, large print, cassette, diskette, email at bc-subscribe@ccbnet.org, and online in readable and downloadable text and audio media. Recorded by the volunteers of the Northern California Unit of Recording for the Blind and Dyslexic. Donna Pomerantz, President, 1115 Cordova Street, number 402, Pasadena, California, 91106, 3036, phone 626-844-4388, or donna.pomerantz@ccbnet.org. Executive Office, California Council of the Blind, 1510 J Street, Suite 125, Sacramento, California, 95814-2098, or 800-221-8359, toll free, 916-441-2100 voice, 916-441-2188 fax, email ccotb@ccbnet.org, website at www.ccbnet.org. San Francisco Bay Area Office, Catherine Skivers, 836 Risotto Street, Hayward, California, 94545-2120, phone 510-357-1986, or cathie.skivers@ccbnet.org, Los Angeles Area Office. Donna Pomerantz, 1115 Cordova Street, number 402, Pasadena, California, 91106-3036, at 626-844-4388, or donna.pomerantz@ccbnet.org. Frank Welty, Director, Advocacy and Governmental Affairs, 800-221-6359, toll-free, 650-576-4177, cell, or frank.welte@ccbnet.org. And the webmaster, at webmaster@ccbnet.org. Judy Wilkinson, Editor, 1550 Bancroft Avenue, number 113, San Leandro, California, 94577, phone 510-357-1844, or editor@ccbnet.org. The California Connection is a weekly news service provided by phone in English and Spanish at 800-221-6359, Monday through Friday after 4 p.m., and all day on weekends and holidays. By email subscription, send a blank message to connection-subscribe@ccbnet.org or on the web at ccbnet.org. Submissions for the California Connection can be emailed to gabe.griffith@ccbnet.org. Non-members are requested and members are invited to pay a yearly subscription fee of $10 toward the production of The Blind Californian. If you or a friend would like to remember the California Council of the Blind in your will, you can do so by employing the following language. I give, devise, and bequeath unto the California Council of the Blind, a nonprofit charitable organization in California, the sum of blank dollars or anything else to be used for its worthy purposes on behalf of blind persons. If your wishes are more complex, you may have your attorney communicate with the executive office for other suggested forms. Thank you. In accepting material for the Blind Californian, priority will be given to articles concerning the activities and policies of the California Council of the Blind and to the experiences and concerns of blind persons. Recommended length is under 3 pages or 1,800 words. The deadline to submit material for the spring 2011 issue of The Blind Californian is noon, March 1, 2011. Please send all address changes to the Executive Office. Table of Contents. Editor's Page, Judy Wilkinson, page 1. President's Page, Jeff Tom and Donna Pomerantz, page 4. Fall CCB Convention Report, Multiple Contributors, page 6. Another Look at Health Care Reform, Stephen Mendelson, page 22. The CEA Loan Committee, Don Queen, page 30. Announcement from Sierra Regional Ski for Light, Charlene Wills, page 32. CCB Awards, Catherine Skybers, page 32. My Summer of Accomplishments, Beryl Brown, page 35. CCB's Revival of Deafblind Committee, David Hanlon, page 37. Report on State and Federal Legislation, Frank Welty, Director of Advocacy and Governmental Affairs, page 38. Summary of Fall 2010 Resolutions, Frank Welty, page 43. ACB Convention Report Part 2, Jeff Tom and Donna Pomerantz, page 44. Board Minutes, Gabe Griffiths, page 50. Advocacy 101, Lecture 3, Advocating for Access, Frank Welty, page 52. CCB Board and Directors, 2010, page 56. Page 1, Editor's Page, by Judy Wilkinson. I am fortunate that one privilege of editing this publication is that I get my own soapbox in every issue to talk about pretty much whatever takes my fancy. I had a particular topic in mind for this issue, but as sometimes happens as the articles came in, I found a theme emerging which interested me more and which I find more relevant to this issue. You'll get the other one sometime in the future. The recurring theme to which I'd like to add my voice can be stated in a single word, advocacy. In his 101 series lecture, Frank Welty provides strategies for advocating for causes you believe in. Stephen Mendelson, in his article on health care reform, emphasizes that we must each become an advocate to ensure that aspects of the new spectrum of health care issues facing us as blind or visually impaired citizens don't get overlooked. And in her first message, as our new president, Donna Pomerantz, reminds us that this organization belongs to each of us and that every single one of us must, in a sense, become advocates for those areas where we have skill or expertise. To me, the essence of advocacy has two components, speaking up and maintaining perspective. Most of us aren't born good advocates. We gain the skills with practice and experience. After nearly 40 years as a member of this organization, from its NFB days through its standalone status to its current affiliation with ACB, I'm very good at speaking up, but I wasn't always. Looking back, I now realize I like participating in my classes, asking questions, making my point. I even got over my fear when instructors unexpectedly called on me, and I stumbled for answers. I survived to talk another day. Page 2. Finally, in my chapter meetings of the UC students in the early 60s, where everyone liked to talk, I asked a question about a piece of legislation. No one laughed, and I learned about a particular bill we were promoting. Repeatedly, I expanded my comfort zone, as in the following incident. In the spring of my sophomore year, I answered the phone one afternoon when I was the only one at T22, the semi-permanent portable where all the blind students studied back then. "This is Dr. Tenbrek," the voice said. Many of you will recognize the name Jacobus Tenbrek, if for no other reason than that Catherine Skybers, in her recent articles about CCB history, refers to this member of the founders of the organization. While he is a controversial figure in ACB annals, he is revered by the NFB, and as a UC professor and sponsor of our student group, I knew, admired, and was terrified of him. "I've found a little money from a generous donor here in Berkeley and wondered if any of you over there needed anything." I was tongue-tied. My knees shook. I desperately wished someone else were there for me to hand off the call to. Well, as some of you know, Dr. Tenbrek didn't suffer fools, and as the silence lengthened, he said, "Well, if no one there needs anything, No, I said, that is yes, sir. We don't have enough Braille paper. I used the backsides of all my notes from last semester. How much paper do you need? Any amount would do. I said, give me a number. He wasn't making it easy for me. Well, if we had 6, maybe 8 reams of paper, that would give everyone some for probably a year. Why do you need so much paper? Well, I write over 5 pages an hour every lecture and practically copy my textbooks word for word. I was surviving. Page 3. That all? We could use some tapes. He wanted to know why rehab wasn't buying us tapes. Having justified the need for paper, I now had to make the case for tapes. We got them, but never enough to save books from earlier semesters to keep as references. That's a good reason. I was so thrilled that I didn't hear his next question. I can't hear a number. I asked for 100. Shall I tell the others you have money for things they need? No, you just spent it all. I hung up, knees still wobbly, but elated. I had advocated for things we needed and been told by the man I almost considered God that I had defended my requests. On my first trip to Sacramento, I couldn't imagine ever talking to a member who did all the talking. I discovered that the secretaries and administrative assistants were down-to-earth people, kind, interested, and willing to listen. Then in my junior year, I took a bus by myself to Sacramento and visited legislators' offices. I was handing out invitations to our legislative dinner rather than arguing about a difficult issue, but I had gone into those offices, spoken to the staff, and survived. I'm proud to say that though I couldn't accept the job, because, as luck would have it, I had gotten a summer teaching position, in 1968 the CCB offered me its job as legislative advocate, only a few short years after my joining the organization. So speak out and expand your comfort zone. Ask questions, make your point, stand your ground. In small committees, at chapter meetings, then perhaps on the floor of the convention. Then, in all the ways and places, we so need your efforts. As for maintaining perspective, Frank wisely advises, keep your temper while advocating. Now, this I'm not so good at. Threatening to sue Safeway because their so-called site for visually impaired shoppers lacked crucial services offered to folks using the regular website was not one of my better moments. Screaming at the taxi driver, who refused to take me and my guide dog to the airport, got me no closer to JFK. But I can't spend another 40 years learning this oh-so-important aspect of advocacy. Page 4, President's Page, by Jeff Tom and Donna Pomerantz. By the time you read this as your outgoing president, I will be little more than a distant memory. In that vein, I requested, and President Pomerantz has accepted, the chore of giving you a glimpse into the CCB's future. As I said in my article in the previous BC, I've been deeply honored to serve all of you. I also said that it's time to look ahead and not behind, and with that, I turn the reins of this article over to our new leader, under whom I am very proud to be serving. Thank you, Jeff, for being available to answer questions and for taking the time to share your experience with me as the incoming president of the California Council of the Blind. It is with deep honor and respect that I give thanks to all of you for electing me to serve as CCB president. We have a rich history that spans over 75 years, and we must continue moving forward together on the strong, solid foundation our predecessors built for us. Some of our founders and longtime members are still with us today. It is my hope that I can also draw upon their wisdom, as well as that of each and every one who comprises our membership. CCB is a grassroots membership organization, and in keeping with that philosophy, I'm asking each of you to let me know how you feel you can best help our organization. What concerns do you have about the future of CCB, and what solutions would you suggest so that we can make this council and the state in which we live better? We're all striving to advance opportunities for people who are blind and visually impaired. I know that only by working as a team will we succeed. page 5. We are in the fight of our lives to maintain the services we need in order to compete in mainstream society. Those services are being threatened or have already been cut totally, and CCB must make our needs known and presence felt throughout the state so that our collective voices can be heard. We must accept responsibility for advocating for the services we need and for keeping apprised of issues on the local and state level which affect all of us. I will call upon many of you to take a more active role in advocating for braille literacy, low vision issues, transportation, or in-home support services. Other issues, such as Social Security, web access, guide dog issues, and more, are critical to our lives and the lives of thousands of Californians who are blind and visually impaired. Each of us has our particular concern. If we work together as an organization, we will be successful. The load won't be as heavy if we make a choice to carry it together. I will hold calls with members from throughout the state in order to improve communication between conventions. This will strengthen our bond and assist one another in brainstorming possible approaches to address those issues we are all facing. I will also communicate regularly with chapter presidents via telephone and email so we can collectively support each other and share ideas for strengthening our chapters. I will also communicate regularly with committee chairs in order to hear their concerns and how the state organization can better facilitate the work of those committees. CCB, like most not-for-profit organizations, is struggling financially. Currently, money is going out faster than coming in. Page 6. Obviously, this can't continue, and I believe that collectively we can address this situation by sharing ideas that have worked for other organizations in bringing in revenue from outside sources. I've already begun sharing and working with members on possible funding sources and revenue streams. I urge each of you to contact me either via telephone, email, or whatever way works best to let me know where you wish to serve. You know best your strengths and what you enjoy doing. As I've shared continuously, each and every one of us makes CCB what it is, and everyone is needed to help CCB remain strong and a force that will be heard. All of us together are the future of CCB. Our organization is only as strong as each individual member. I commit to working with you to forward our mission of improving the lives of blind and visually impaired persons residing in California. Together, we will make a difference by making our voices heard. Please join me in this endeavor. CCB Fall 2010 Convention Report. Thanks to a number of contributors to this report, artists Bazin, Lorraine Brown, Stephen Mendelson, Phil Obregon, Roger Peterson, Catherine Schmidt-Whitaker, Judy Wilkinson. This time we have longer accounts of the four general sessions and less space devoted to the other convention activities. Remember, most of the convention events are available in audio MP3 files for download and playback. Lorraine Brown, Part 1, Friday afternoon, brought the first CCB general session with Jeff Tom, CCB president, presiding. Page 7. After the invocation, the presentation of the colors by the United States Navy Color Guard and the Pledge of Allegiance, the program began with a history lesson about La Jolla from Carol Olton, historian, La Jolla Historical Society. She said that La Jolla's name is a somewhat controversial subject among town historians. Is it from the Spanish word for jewel or the Indian for hole in the mountain? In the 1890s, La Jolla became an artist colony, and newspaper heiress Ellen Browning Scripps, whose name is on a number of landmarks and institutions, including the Scripps Institute of Oceanography, settled there. Wesley Johnson and Nikki Warren from Accessible San Diego not only spoke about how accessible San Diego is, but also brought the information on thumb drives for distribution. Adaptive martial arts practice, the path to inner strength and mental focus, was the title on the next presentation by Mario Schaap, certified instructor. He stated that martial arts began when someone first threw a stone and hit his opponent. Do you want to learn how to sail before the tide changes too often? Kelly Gardner, Program Coordinator, Challenged America San Diego, spoke about learning how to sail as a disabled person. The organization was started by two disabled veterans in 1978 when, sitting on the shore in their wheelchairs, they saw people having fun sailing and decided they also wanted to do it. A volunteer sits behind the participant for instruction, safety, and his eyes. The controls in front of the participant allow her to do the sailing. Tammy Earhart, a participant with the group, told how learning to sail had brought her out of severe depression when she lost most of her vision. Joe Xavier, Deputy Director, Specialized Services Division, Department of Rehabilitation, DOR, was the last presenter of this session. He said that DOR was still working on dispensing the stimulus money received from the federal government last year. Page 8. Phil Obregon. The second general session was called to order by Presiding Officer, First Vice President Eugene Lozano. Remembrance of CCB members who have passed away since the Spring 2010 convention included Mark Oswald from the Bayview chapter, Candace Jones from the San Francisco chapter, Lillian Gaines from the Redwood Empire chapter, Francis Menino from the Glendale Burbank chapter, and Barbara Parker, former CCB employee. Rob Turner gave the credentials report. This included the new Coachella Valley chapter. Seven chapters did not provide membership information and were not seated. The first speaker of the evening was John Feeney, M.D., Chief Medical Officer, Vanda Pharmaceuticals, Inc., Rockville, Maryland. Dr. Feeney spoke on the subject of circadian rhythm sleep disorders in totally blind people. He described how the body clock controls our sleep patterns in 24-hour cycles, but on average, the cycles are actually 24.5 to 25 hours. Sleep disorder is often misdiagnosed as anxiety, depression, or chronic insomnia. When there is no light perception, the resetting of the body's clock doesn't occur, and the body clock will function at its own cycle, which is usually longer than 24 hours. Science have discovered a melatonergic chemical system in the brain, the next best thing outside of light perception, for synchronizing the body rhythms. Dr. Feeney told us about previous studies that showed taking regular doses of melatonin can reset the body clock and realign the various body cycles, but since melatonin is not a regulated drug product, there are no clear directions for its use. Page 9. Vanda Pharmaceuticals has a drug product called tasinaltione that is similar to melatonin. In short-term trials, it has shown the ability to change the body clock in small increments. They are hoping to enroll 160 patients who are totally blind and have sleep or wake problems in a new study. Their hope is to demonstrate the effectiveness and safety of the drug as well as learn more about the disorder. They are looking for subjects between 18 and 75 years of age, in general good health, not taking medications that will interfere with the measurement of the body clock. There is currently a clinical trial site in Los Angeles, and there are plans to open sites in San Diego, Sacramento, and the San Francisco Bay Area. To inquire about participating in the study, please call 1-888-389-7033. The second speaker was Daniel Sippel, President, Randolph Shepherd Vendors of America, Eau Claire, Wisconsin. He spoke about the future of the program and expressed hope that everyone enjoys it as much as he does. The National State Agencies for the Blind, NCSAB, and the Council of State Agencies for Vocational Rehabilitation, CSAVR, formed an organization called Business Entrepreneur Alliance, BEA, to protect and improve the Randolph-Shepard Act. A white paper prepared by BEA makes about 15 recommendations on how the program needs to change. Dan spoke briefly about one of the recommendations to form a national nominee agency. This would allow the Randolph Shepherd program to acquire business opportunities that the state agencies have bypassed and generate greater opportunities for employment for the blind. ACB report by Mitch Pomerantz, President, American Council of the Blind. Mitch first spoke on the Pedestrian Safety Enhancement Act. Despite unanimous agreement within the blindness community and support from the automobile industry, disagreement arose in Congress unrelated to the bill's language, which will probably doom this legislation for the current session of Congress. Page 10. 3 weeks ago, President Obama signed into law the 21st Century Communications and Video Accessibility Act. As a result, over the next several years, we can look forward to seeing better accessibility of cell phones, on-screen television menus, emergency notices, and video-described movies. ACB was unsuccessful in two grant applications to the Department of Education for ongoing funding of the Audio Description Project, which promotes wider use of this communications medium to the public. ACB is also working with the Smith Kettlewell Institute in San Francisco on another grant application related to audio description. He further reported that at the ACB convention this summer, the monthly monetary support, MMS, program reached a milestone of over 200 participating ACB members and friends. Around November 15th, ACB will send out a fall fundraising letter to every member of the organization. The letter highlights ACB's successes in 2010 and asks for our assistance in keeping the work and efforts of this organization alive. Sometime around December 1st, we will see some changes to the ACB store website. A company called DQ Systems of Virginia has agreed to update and modernize the ACB store website free of charge. Mitch reminded everyone of two events coming up in 2011. The first is the ACB Legislative Seminar, February 25 through March 1 in the Washington, D.C. area. He called upon California to again send a delegation to Capitol Hill to make the pitch for our legislative agenda. Page 11. The second event is the 50th Annual ACB National Conference and Convention, taking place from July 8 to 16 in Reno, Nevada. Mitch then fielded questions from the floor about accessibility progress on the Kindle e-book reading device and the expected time frame for seeing results of quiet car legislation. In both cases, he seemed optimistic that progress is being made. Amazon is aware that schools and universities must not use e-book devices that are inaccessible to blind and visually impaired students. As to the quiet car issue, he feels that automobile engineers truly understand the safety issue posed by such vehicles. CCB President's Report. Jeff Tom gave an overview of what is going on in CCB and what to look for going forward. As a cost-saving measure, he expects that K through 12 schools will someday go to a paperless environment. CCB is laying the groundwork to ensure that visually impaired students are not left behind in the new digital forms of school curricula. Because JetBlue Airways has shown an unwillingness to act on making their website and kiosks accessible, CCB has filed a lawsuit to ensure that JetBlue will work toward making their systems usable by blind and visually impaired people. CCB is also part of a lawsuit to ensure that the Golden Gate recreational areas are made accessible. Jeff encouraged us to provide input on the accessibility of the areas that we have experience with. Finally, we've entered into structured negotiations with the Cinemark Theater chain to provide audio description in their Northern California theaters. Jeff again acknowledged the new Coachella Valley CCB chapter. He expressed that overall CCB membership is up and might reach 1,400 members by the end of the year. Page 12. He thanked and acknowledged the hard work of our former webmaster, Joel Isaac, who just moved to New York. He then expressed optimism for the new technical operations group that will take over Joel's role in building and maintaining the CCB website. and he thanked Lily McCrae for her effort in helping to obtain a $5,000 Kelly Foundation grant to help in our web presence effort. Jeff urged us and our families and friends to participate in the supermarket reward card fundraising programs. In conclusion, Jeff expressed thanks to both current and past staff members, officers, chapter presidents, and CCB members who worked at his side these past 8 years. And he assured us that he isn't going anywhere, but will continue working hard to make the next president the most successful ever. He was then given a well-deserved standing ovation. The final event for this session was the election of officers. Hearty congratulations go out to newly elected President Donna Pomerantz, second Vice President Roger Peterson, and Treasurer Peter Pardini. David Hanlon and Artis Bazin were elected to the Board of Directors. First Vice President Eugene Lozano and Directors Lena Bandy, David Jackson, and Vince Calderon were re-elected to their current positions. Catherine Schmidt Whitaker. The third CCB General Session, Saturday afternoon, with Donna Pomerantz, second Vice President, presiding, the invocation was conducted by Reverend Winston Sharp, a member of the Blinded Veterans Association. United States Marine Corps Color Guard presented the colors, and Hugh Lipscomb, a member of the Blinded Veterans Association, led the Pledge of Allegiance. Page 13. Tom Carnes, CCB member, introduced the first speaker, Dr. V. S. Ramachandran, M.D., Ph.D., Director of the Center for Brain and Cognition, University of California, San Diego, who spoke on the topic of plasticity of the brain. Dr. Ramachandran studies how neurons function and respond to eyesight in monkeys and humans. Researchers found that an individual can experience phantom paralysis recovery and reduction in pain by looking into a mirror at the opposite normal functioning hand. Scientists have learned that when a person loses their eyesight, the touch sensation increases because touch sensation is routed to the visual cortex instead of the touch cortex. However, for individuals who were born with no light perception, the touch sensation remains in the touch cortex and does not travel to the visual cortex. More interesting information about how neurons function in the brain are described in his book, Phantoms of the Brain. The second topic was securing accommodations on standardized tests, common problems and legal developments, presented by Carla Gilbride, staff attorney with the Disability Rights Advocates located in Berkeley, California. DRA is a cross-disabilities advocacy organization that focuses primarily on class action lawsuits and some individual cases believed to have far-reaching impact. Standardized tests are taken for entrance into graduate and professional schools and for professional licensure. Access to and an equitable testing experience for people with disabilities is covered in the Americans with Disabilities Act. The law states that exams need to be provided in a place and manner that is accessible. In March, the Department of Justice issued revised regulations that support a list of auxiliary services that include the standard accommodations, Braille, human reader, large print, and screen readers and magnification software to be usable by individuals who are blind or have communication disorders, such that the exam measures the effects of test and not disability. Page 14. There is also discrepancy between documents that are completed by a medical doctor or service professional, such as an assistive technology coordinator, the testing agency relying on consultant determination, and the time it takes to complete the request process and hear a decision. Sometimes the decision is a week before the exam and places the individual in a quandary as to appeal or go forward with the exam with modified or no accommodations. Currently, there are two court cases in California and Maryland against the LSAT for not allowing the use of assistive technology for test takers who are blind. The California court said a test taker who is blind should be able to use assistive technology in a testing environment. while the Maryland court said there were some security concerns, so assistive technology was not permitted. The Educational Testing Service, ETS, is in the process of developing its own assistive technology software to be used in the testing situation. There remains the issue of people needing the time to practice the use of the assistive technology prior to the examination date. If you are in the situation of needing to take an alternative version of an exam, consider the following advice provided by Speaker Gilbride. Have an independent way to monitor the time. Take a copy of the letter granting accommodations for the test with you to the exam session. The impact of hearing loss and the needs of individuals who have hearing and sight loss were described by Kathy Kirsch's regional representative, Helen Keller, National Center, Southwest Region, based in San Diego, California. Approximately 1 in 10 people have a hearing loss. 1 million are profoundly deaf. Page 15. Ages 3 to 5 are the most critical language acquisition years, with an average of 2,000 words acquired by age 5. Individuals who have both hearing and eyesight loss often do not feel their needs are met by entities serving the hearing loss or vision loss communities. There is a need for groups such as the newly reconstituted Deaf-Blind Committee to focus on the unique needs of the deaf-blind. San Diego is the only community in the state that provides a comprehensive service for the deaf-blind community as a result of a bequest from a woman who passed away. The services include transportation and assistance at doctor's appointments, social services, and other areas. There is a need for additional programs in the state. Hearing aids cost approximately $2,500 each. An organization, Hearing More, refurbishes them for low-income clients. The afternoon session was rounded out with the CCB Governmental Affairs Report by our own Frank Welty, Director of Governmental Affairs for the CCB. See his report in this issue. The Sunday General Session opened with a welcome from Jeff Tom and his reflections on presiding over his last General Session as CCB President. Jeff thanked Ken Metz for streaming the convention via ACB Radio. He also thanked the volunteers from the community organizations for their assistance during the convention. A special thank you went to longtime CCB contributors Pinky and Mary Lou. Gabe Griffith, CCB Secretary, read minutes of the 2010 Spring CCB Convention, which were approved. Artis Bazin, Chair of the Membership Committee, encouraged one member from each chapter to be added to the membership listserv. If you know someone interested in starting up a thrift store using the CCB name, let Jerry Counselor know. Page 16. For summaries of the 6 resolutions submitted at this convention, see the summary in this issue. Jeff Tom encouraged members to submit resolutions sharing that the committee chair is willing to work with individuals to develop and write a resolution based on topic of interest or concern. Jeff thanked Presidents Glenda Castle and Jacqueline Jackson and members from the San Diego chapter and San Diego Braille Club chapter for their hospitality and a terrific convention.
The Treasurer's Report was presented by Treasurer Chris Gray. CCB's financial reports are now up to date, and page 20. Projections and expenditures will now be available on a monthly, quarterly, or upon request basis. CCB has brought in 58% of projected income for the year compared to spending 81% of budgeted expenditures for the year. Treasurer Gray stated to the membership that the CCB board needs to either significantly reduce expenses and/or increase income. CCB can draw upon some resources, but they will not last for many years. CCB has over $1 million in assets, but many of these are restricted funds, such as the new APERI fund. The treasurer pointed out that CCB has been spending $75,000 to $150,000 more than generated income each of the past several years. It is projected at this time that CCB will spend approximately $85,000 more than generated income this year. CCB's investments in 2008 and early 2009 lost approximately 30-40% as the overall market did not fare well. The investments have begun to turn around and seen significant improvements during 2010. The CDs and money market accounts providing recent funds are now exhausted. The treasurer's report was adopted. Chris thanked the membership for their support while he was treasurer. Chris also expressed confidence and support for Peter Pardini as incoming treasurer. Grant writing is an area that CCB has been exploring. Lilly has made great strides in this area. Grants tend to have a specific focus that needs to match CCB's needs and are competitive for the receipt of the grants. There are three ways that each CCB member can assist CCB. Page 21. With generation of income. One option is through store shopping reward programs. Once signed up for the program, you show your card at checkout for CCB to automatically receive a percentage. Stores where CCB is registered include Food for Less, Ralph's, Vons, and Lucky's. A second opportunity is to sign up for ACB's Monthly Monetary Support Program, MMS, where you can designate CCB to receive up to 50% of your donation. The third program, for those who are eligible, involves completing a utilities program application for which CCB receives a contribution. To learn more about any of these programs, contact the CCB office. The CCB membership adopted a revision to the Constitution and bylaws to change the term convention to conference and convention to more appropriately reflect what actually occurs during the CCB gathering. There was no old or new business. The spring conference and convention will be held at the DoubleTree Hotel in Sacramento from May 11 to 15, 2011. The fall 2011 and 2012 conference and conventions will be held at the Lax Crown Plaza Hotel in Los Angeles. Other convention activities. Note, because of the length of this report, the activities of the board meeting will be covered when the minutes appear in an upcoming BC. Page 22. Friday morning. Stephen Mendelson, the joint session of California Council of Citizens with Low Vision, CCCLV, and the Committee on Access and Transportation, CAT, welcomed Jeanine Warden of the U.S. Department of Justice, who gave a very informative overview of developments under the ADA. New Title II, State and Local Government, and Title III, Public Accommodations, regulations issued by the department will come into effect in early 2011. Many of the changes are of great importance to people who are blind or visually impaired, including expanded definitions of the technologies that can be used to provide effective communication and requirements that extend accommodations and accessibility requirements to people who accompany people with disabilities, such as parents who are blind. Opportunities for public input were also highlighted, including through commenting on four requests for comment on proposed ADA rules, and including public hearings scheduled for the fall and early winter in at least three cities. ADA complaint processes have also been updated, including by enabling Title II or Title III complaints to be submitted by email. In this connection, the DOJ has also engaged in vigorous enforcement efforts, including the conduct of compliance investigations, to assess the performance of local and state governments more systematically. Page 23. Roger Peterson. On Friday morning, the Braille Revival League of California, BRLC, held its regular business meeting, with President Steve Fort presiding. After the business meeting, the program offered presentations by two Braille instructors. First, CCB member Evelyn Drury, a Braille instructor at the Braille Institute in San Diego, discussed how Braille has taught the newly blind older adults, and what the goals and expectations are. Sharon Bacon, Braille instructor at the Braille Institute La Jolla, who has been teaching 12 years, herself started as an institute student. The average age of her students is 65 or older, many suffering from macular degeneration. As we have done for several years, we collected money during the meeting to help defray expenses for a young person attending the Braille Challenge at the Braille Institute in Los Angeles. The contestants' expenses are paid while they are in Los Angeles, but transportation for the young person and a family member is not covered and is a hardship for some families. Judy Wilkinson, California Library Users of America, CLUA, held its business meeting and elected Judy Wilkinson president, Ann Kazor secretary, and Pam Metz to the board. The BRLC/CLUAL entrance speaker was Louise Zuckerman, head librarian of the Braille Institute San Diego. She reviewed recent developments in distribution of the new players, passing one around for all to play with. Page 24. Saturday morning. Ardis Bazin. At a breakfast seminar, Dr. Ron Milliman, ACB Public Relations Chair, spoke on guerrilla marketing. He suggested that chapters could make use of free bulletin boards. Most of the following resources have online versions: listings on radio, TV, cable, and newspapers, churches, stores, service centers, and online directories. He also suggested taking advantage of free placement of flyers or brochures in public places, doctor offices, especially ophthalmologists and optometrists, state services for the blind. Some counselors will give your materials to clients. State divisions of the NLS will often include your brochure with their mailings and service centers. Public service announcements, PSAs, radio, TV, and cable will run them if they have room or find them especially compelling. Refer to the PSA handbook for ACB affiliates and chapters, available on the ACB website. Media releases, press, editorial, or news releases, radio, TV, cable, etc. Contemporary sources are social media online. Refer to the Puerto Rico handbook for ACB affiliates and chapters. Guest appearances were suggested as a means of publicizing your chapters or events, radio and TV programs, clubs and organizations, schools and universities, and conferences. Other ways to become known are using business cards, having a website, listings on search engines, social media, Facebook, Twitter, Wikipedia, MySpace, and YouTube.
Lorraine Brown. On Saturday morning was a combined meeting of Council of Citizens with Low Vision, CCCLV, and Seniors with Vision Loss. Kathy Holmes Hardy and Annabelle Kirkendall of Education and Outreach, San Diego County Department of Aging and Independence, presented Mental Health is Ageless, emphasizing how common and treatable depression can be among older people. They gave out a packet of information, only some of which was in accessible large print format. Albert Sales, Executive Director, San Diego County Public Authority in Home Support Services, IHSS, spoke on the topic, Living the Life You Want. Suggestions included living a balanced life, setting achievable goals, and self-advocacy. Mr. Sales is quadriplegic. He spoke while his wife held his speech and the microphone. Following the break, the presenter was Stephen Mendelson, a visually impaired attorney from San Leandro and an author on tax law and disability. He spoke on the impact of health care reform on blind and visually impaired people and new rules pertaining to our rights as blind and visually impaired airline passengers. See his article on health care reform in this issue. Judy Wilkinson, the Guide Dog Users of California, GDUC, conducted its business meeting bright and early Saturday morning. Officers elected included Pam Metz, Vice President, Ken Metz, Treasurer, and David Jackson, Board Member. Page 21. Some discussion followed about fundraising ideas as well as discussion of possible taxes which must be paid to the CCB office from fundraising items. Implications of passage of SB 1491 dealing with in-home training of guide dog handlers and the upcoming sunset of the Guide Dog Board were also discussed. The program speaker was Charlene Ornelas, who presented her experiences as a member of the Transportation Advisory Committee in San Diego on accessibility of the San Diego trolley. She has advocated for and obtained many important accessibility modifications vital to dogs and their handlers, including tactile areas to wait for car, easy-to-find buttons both inside and outside the car. She gave tips about placing dogs under seats, having them precede you in and out of the car so as to avoid tragedies such as happened recently in Vancouver when a dog shut outside a moving train car was seriously injured. She reminded us that all transportation entities must have advisory committees and take public comment. At the Orientation Center for the Blind Luncheon, we heard from Joe Xavier, or Xavier, Deputy Director for Specialized Services Division within DOR, who reported on the new construction being undertaken at OCB scheduled to be fully completed before the deadline of September 2011. The dorm will have lots of renovations, including a new computer lab, elevator to the second floor, small apartments, refurbished dorm rooms. Staffing needs include an on-site maintenance engineer and rehab supervisor, among others. He discussed how local students will be served while the campus is closed for about 6 weeks at the end of 2010. New ideas for updating the curriculum, such as classes in dance, yoga, and self-defense to enhance social confidence, more familiarity with online resources, apartment living skills such as budgeting. The idea is to modernize the students' experience for life and job skills. Catherine Bales of Blind Field Services let us know how hard her staff has been working despite hiring freezes and mandatory days off. Page 22.
Another Look at Healthcare Reform by Stephen Mendelson. Everyone has heard a great deal about the National Health System overhaul enacted last spring. For some people, though, the more we hear, the greater is our confusion. No article can eliminate all that confusion. Many questions await for their federal and state regulations before they can be resolved, and each day brings the emergence of new issues that no one anticipated. However, this article attempts to dispel some of the confusion. 1. Will the new law affect discrimination that people with disabilities face in health insurance? Strange as it may seem, until now the refusal of an insurer to cover someone because of a disability has generally been legal. The new law doesn't address that problem directly, but it. Page 28. Will achieve the result of making health insurance more available and making discrimination rarer. It does this in two ways. First, it creates what are known as high-risk pools through which anyone who has been uninsured for over 6 months and who would be denied coverage because of a pre-existing condition can get health insurance. The second way in which the new law combats discrimination is that, beginning in 2014, when many of the new law's provisions come into effect, it will be unlawful for insurers to deny coverage or raise the price of coverage based on health status. Also in 2014, an important new source of insurance called health insurance exchanges will come into existence, and insurance offered through these exchanges must be available without regard to health status or disability. Through legislation passed this September, California became the first state to establish its health insurance exchange. In this, and a number of other ways, this state has been among the most energetic in moving forward with implementation of the wide range of state activities allowed or required by the new law. All this does not mean that insurance will be cheap, and there is widespread concern whether it will be affordable for many people. Insurers will still have some discretion in setting rates for the different policies they sell, although several mechanisms will exist to prevent insurers from charging excessive premiums depending on. Page 29. How vigorous states choose to be in their enforcement. Broader availability of coverage also does not mean that policy suitable to every individual's needs will be available. The law specifies certain features that each policy must include, and there will be several levels of coverage to choose among. But there won't be much, if any, individualization. People will need to choose among the available packages as carefully as they can, in light of their own situations. 2. How will the new law affect the kinds or amounts of medical care and services people can expect to receive? This depends on whether your insurance is employer-provided, individually purchased, Medicaid, Medicare, or TRICARE. On the whole, the most important changes at the outset will relate to the creation of mandated coverage packages, including wellness and preventive services, many with no copayments, that most policies will have to provide, appeal rights from denials of treatments or services, which are made more uniform and are improved, and a host of regulatory, rate setting, and other matters. These will all affect the care and services you receive, but they will do so indirectly. Mostly they bear upon the relationship among insurers, insurance purchasers, and government regulators. The biggest changes in your experience of the healthcare system will come over time, as numerous research initiatives under the new law lead to the implementation of new ideas about how to administer healthcare, and page 30, about what goods and services are effective and should be provided. There will also be a new emphasis on preventive care and on provider accountability, and this will be manifested in what doctors and hospitals get paid for doing, and how much. There will be an effort to increase the role of primary care, that is, of general practice or family doctors, in the management of treatment. This is supposed to mean better coordination, efficiency, and accountability in the provision of care, but because of a shortage of primary care physicians, it could also mean longer waits for appointments and for some services. Many changes will affect healthcare providers, including doctors and hospitals, and all of these will eventually affect patients, but these effects will be indirect, and, as a patient, you may never know when the new law is the source of some change in the procedures or services you experience. In that sense, most of the major changes over time will occur under the hood. For example, hospitals and the government will argue over when hospital readmission rates are too high, because it is widely believed that many people go in and out of hospitals in a revolving door fashion. Reimbursement mechanisms will be developed to reward hospitals for lower readmission rates and to punish them financially for higher rates. This should in turn mean more emphasis on discharge planning and coordination of care between hospitals and the community, and that will affect you. But whether it will result in attention to the unique needs of people with vision disabilities is too early. Page 31. To tell. If new services are developed, such as accessible discharge instructions of the sort the law clearly contemplates, no one will tell you that the new law and its payment policies are the explanation. You can be pretty sure, though, that when the new law results in a change that hospitals, doctors, or insurance companies particularly dislike, they will make sure you know what is at fault and how bad it is for you. 3. How will people pay for their insurance? Beginning in 2014, individuals with incomes up to 133% of the federal poverty level will be eligible for Medicaid, the federal state health insurance program. This represents a major expansion in Medicaid eligibility, and some people with disabilities, whose incomes were previously too high for Medicaid, will become eligible under the 133% standard. Other people who do not qualify for Medicaid and need to buy their own insurance through the individual market will select from among the policies made available through the health insurance exchange in their state. If their incomes are low, the government will subsidize their premium costs, primarily through a tax credit. This is an unusual tax credit, though, because it won't be paid to you when you file your tax return. Instead, it will be paid to the insurer on your behalf. Neither the amount of these tax credits nor the value of the medical services provided through the insurance coverage will be countable income or resources for means-tested program purposes such as SSI or food stamps. Page 32. People who obtain their health insurance through their work will continue to receive their coverage as a fringe benefit of employment. Small employers will be subsidized to provide such insurance. It is likely that many employers will begin including what are called behavioral health incentives in their plans, including financial incentives for smoking cessation, gym membership, or weight loss, and sometimes including penalties for failure to succeed in these goals. Situations may arise in which the measures required by the program are not possible because of a disability. In such cases, punishing someone financially for failure or non-participation may prove to be a form of discrimination. 4. If I'm currently receiving Medicaid but would like to switch to private insurance, can I go down to the local health insurance exchange when it opens and buy a policy? We don't know for certain, but the answer appears to be no, unless your state refuses to establish a health insurance exchange, as some states are threatening to do. If you go to an exchange, you will likely be screened for Medicaid eligibility and given that insurance if you qualify. 5. What about accessibility? The new law places great emphasis on consumer choice and informed decision-making about the various insurance options, about the quality of care from different modalities or different providers, about comparative costs, and about a page 33 number of other matters. To help consumers evaluate all these factors and make informed choices among all their options, the law calls for the establishment of dozens of internet sites by different entities to provide and update information. But the law is not clear that these sites have to be accessible to people with disabilities. Recent guidance published by the government in the past several weeks appears to signal an awareness of this issue and an attempt to fill in this gap. For the moment, what is important to remember is that whatever the statute or implementing regulations do or don't say, the new law does not eliminate general civil rights protections, including the right to effective communication and including emerging internet access rights. There is nothing in the new law to curtail broad civil rights protections, including accessibility rights under the ADA, sections 504 and 508, and state human rights laws. Furthermore, nothing in the law suggests that these laws don't apply here. You can and should press for accessibility of any information made available to the public under the new law. And this is true for documents you need to read, understand, or sign, as well as for websites. Whether informed consent forms that patients must sign, or warning labels, treatment instructions, or other materials people need to be able to read, the principles, if not the specific language of the new law, and the provisions of many other laws, all support your right to accessibility. Page 34. The new law, although not explicit in requiring these materials to be provided in a form that makes them accessible to people prevented by disability from reading standard print, does make a pathetic start by requiring that certain documents be made available in print no smaller than 12-point type. For the time being, one may again need to fall back upon general civil rights provisions in those cases where recourse to the law becomes necessary. 6. What about specialized goods and services such as assistive technology? It comes up in a number of contexts in the statute. First, every insurance policy covered by the Act and sold through the exchanges will be required to offer a summary of its provisions, and these summaries will have to include information on the definition of key terms. If add-orderable medical equipment, DME, are included in the policy, they will need to be defined. This will be helpful, because although there are now several education and employment laws using and defining the terms at devices and services, these terms are not widely known and have never been satisfactorily reconciled with conventional medical terminology. Additionally, in some instances, habilitation or rehabilitation will not only have to be defined, but may be required services that have to be included in certain policies. But in other areas, the law treats that very badly. For example, in connection with the provisions of the new law expanding the availability of home and community-based, page 35. Attendant services as an alternative to nursing homes, the statute indicates that HAD is excluded from purchase with what are called community first choice funds. And what about access to specialists? The new law will not restrict access to specialists, including ophthalmologists. In fact, in various ways its emphasis on preventive services including screening may increase such access. 7. What about all these alleged Medicare cuts? Much of the rhetoric that has terrified many older Americans and younger persons with disabilities has reflected widespread misunderstanding of the new law. Some of the alleged cuts in Medicare have involved transfer of activities, functions, and payment responsibilities. Others involve reductions, not in the size of the existing program, but merely in the projected rate of program growth. Many of these cuts will slow that rate, but none amounts to actual cuts in the program. Due to concerns over the budget deficit, there is tremendous political pressure building in Congress and elsewhere for further reductions in Medicare's rate of growth, or even to shrink the program in the future, but these pressures do not emanate from the new law, and the proposed cuts would require further legislative action to be adopted. many of the loudest calls for Medicare cost reduction come from the same people who frightened seniors during the recent political campaign with charges that a health care reform law took money away from Medicare. Page 36. In this connection, many readers are familiar with the controversy currently raging over payments to doctors who treat Medicare patients. Unless Congress acts to prevent it, these payments are scheduled to decline steeply, and there are fears that as a result, many physicians will find it economically impossible to treat Medicare patients. This problem is very serious, but it does not originate in the health care reform bill. It results from a statute called the Deficit Reduction Act passed several years ago. A slightly more complex situation exists with Medicaid. Partly through the new law and partly through other provisions, states are currently receiving more federal funds to help pay their Medicaid costs than they have in the past or will in the future. This increase is called enhanced federal match. But many states, already hard-pressed to deal with massive upsurges in their Medicaid enrollment and spending due to the economy, fear being unable to handle the new requirements, especially after the additional federal funds begin to go away. This can be seen in the Medicaid cutbacks, particularly in such programs as home and community-based services, that have already taken place in many states. 8. Are there any advocacy opportunities for shaping the impact of the new law? Hardly a week goes by when one of the responsible federal agencies doesn't issue a request for comment, or an advance notice of proposed rulemaking, ANPRM, on one aspect of the law, or another. Key implementation decisions are also being made as you. Page 37. Read this by every state. Through membership, advocacy, and other organizations, all those who care to get involved in these efforts can, and should do so, either through advocacy efforts, service on any of the numerous advisory committees that will be established, or by other means. From the accessibility issues discussed above, to how your state decides to oversee insurance company compliance, to whether your state goes after available federal funds for developing consumer information resources, or for setting up its health insurance exchange, to whether your state makes its Medicaid funding decisions based on serious cost-benefit calculations, or simply on the basis of which recipients are the least powerful and able to fight back. These, and every other decisions made in the implementation of this vast bill over the decade it will take to roll out, are in the end political decisions as much as they are medical ones. Few issues have generated more passion in recent years, but no issue is likely to have as much impact on your daily life as this. If you look for ways to be involved, you will find them. Whatever way you feel, use those opportunities to the best of your ability. Page 38. See No Interest Loans for Adaptive Equipment. By Don Queen, Chair Committee on Employment Assistance. Yes. Interest-free loans are still available through the CECB Committee on Employment Assistance, CEA. For over 30 years, the CCBC has provided low or no interest loans to blind and visually impaired persons who need adaptive technology to accept or keep a job. There are no interest or service charges, just principal payments for periods of 1 to 3 years. Because this is a revolving loan fund, you must be able to repay the loan so that someone else can also utilize these funds. Nearly every loan has been repaid, that is why we still have a functioning C with loan funds. The CCBC loan fund began with a Mattel Foundation grant which Mitch Pomerantz secured many years ago. So if you need some technology, equipment, or inventory, and meet the eligibility criteria shown below, call Ed Branch at the CCB office. In order to be considered eligible by the committee, you must meet the following criteria. 1. A. Be currently employed in the public or private sectors, or in your own business. B. Have a confirmed offer of employment, or if you own a business, a written business plan. C. Have a confirmed offer of a volunteer position in the public or private sector. 2. Show sufficient verifiable income from earnings, SSI. Page 39. SSDI, a cosigner or some combination thereof, to demonstrate your ability to repay this loan in the stipulated time. 3. Have no significant problem areas on your credit history, however you may apply, if you have little or no established credit. To apply, you must provide a current credit report, complete the loan fund application form, and submit an itemized list of needed equipment, including model numbers, price, and vendor's name and address. Contact the council office at 800-221-6359 or email to request the application form. Announcement from Sierra Regional, Ski for Light. By Charlene Wills. Editor's note, CCB member Charlene Wills sends the following announcement. Save up a few pennies, gear up for adventure and fun, and be prepared to have the time of your life near the close of winter at Sierra Regional Ski for Light's 19th annual 3-day event. March 12th to 14th, 2011. This cross-country skiing and snowshoeing weekend will take place in Truckee, California, and at Tahoe Cross-Country Ski Area, with Page 40. Lodging at the Best Western in Truckee, California. Everyone is welcome, from total beginners to advanced skiers. To participate, contact Cindy Quintana, SRSFL Skier Coordinator, at 530-483-2948, or email vickypost@earthlink.net. Cost $200 plus $40, double occupancy, if staying Friday night in Sacramento beforehand. Don't miss a magical experience where new accomplishments await, and new friendships are certain. CCB Awards. By Catherine Skivers. There are many reasons why I was sad to miss the fall convention held in San Diego. Among them was the fact that I could not be there to present the well-deserved Distinguished Service Award to outgoing President Jeff Thum. Roger Peterson did his usual super job in presenting this award. I was able to hear the entire presentation on ACB radio, thanks to my son Daryl, for bringing it up on his computer for me. It was a pleasure for the committee to see that Jeff got this recognition. He has served 8 years as our president, and being such a great role model for our members and friends. It was sure hard to keep the award a secret. Page 41. Since we made the decision early in 2010, Jeff Thum's award black glass 9x12 inches, gold underplate, and gold lettering. On black plate, landscape mood reads as follows. California Council of the Blind Distinguished Service Award. Jeff Thum, who for decades has been a role model in the blind community, combining more than 30 years of employment with the state of California, winning recognition as Public Lawyer of the Year from the California Bar Association, while serving in many leadership positions in blindness organizations including presidency of the California Council of the Blind from 2003 to 2010, presented this 30th day of October 2010. In the city of La Jolla, California. During the banquet, Publications Committee Chair Bernie Scandarian presented a certificate of appreciation from the committee to Mike Keithley for his dedicated service as editor of the Blind Californian, 2006 to 2010. The frame certificate with a braille overlay was signed by Bernice and CCB President Jeff Thum. Now we look ahead. It is time again to make nominations for 2011 awards. Please review the descriptions of awards that follow and nominate someone. Page 42. You feel is deserving of our thanks and appreciation. The CCB Hall of Fame, up to 5 persons per year who have made significant contributions and sustained effort to advance the goals of CCB over a period of years, may be nominated. The CCB Community Service Award, presented annually to a blind or visually impaired individual who, through his or her association and activities, has demonstrated integration into and interaction with the life of the community. The CCB Distinguished Service Award, given periodically to an outstanding blind or visually impaired person who has contributed significantly to the betterment of blind people in general. The recipient of this award need not be a member of CCB. the CCB Legislator of the Year Award, bestowed periodically on a state or federal legislator who has introduced and successfully directed enactment of legislation in behalf of persons who are blind or visually impaired. The Humanitarian Award is granted to an individual or organization that has assisted blind people in general or CCB, and its affiliate in particular to an extraordinary degree. The recipient may be blind or sighted. The CCB Merit Award, formerly the Certificate of Merit, given to any individual who provides outstanding volunteer service to CCB, its chapters or affiliates. The Chapter of the Year Award, presented by the Membership Committee to the CCB chapter that conducts a group effort to make a significant difference in the life of an individual and/or the local community. The CCB Publications Awards, granted by vote of the Publications Committee to the person who has prepared. Page 43. The Best Article of the Year appearing in the Blind Californian or in newspapers or periodicals. There are two categories, an article related to an issue of importance and an article concerning lifestyle. I have had the privilege of chairing the awards committee for many years. I will be talking with the new president about any changes she may want to make. Currently the members of the awards committee are Gussie Morgan, Roger Peterson, Bernie Scandarian, Joe Smith, Chris Gray, Al Gill, and Don Queen. Nominations should be sent to the committee by February 15, 2011. You may send them to Attention Awards Committee, CCB, 1510 J Street, Suite 125, Sacramento, California, 95814-2098. We are looking forward to hearing from you and hope that the new submissions will be as good as those we received this year. You may want to talk with a member of the committee if you are unsure about the appropriate category for your nomination. Otherwise, the committee may make the selection. Have a happy holiday season and a very happy new year.
My Summer of Accomplishments by Beryl Brown. Editor's note, Redwood Empire chapter member Beryl Brown writes about fellow chapter member Sharon Brown. My summer of accomplishments. Those are the words of Sharon Brown describing this past summer. It took 70 years for that summer to arrive, but it has come into full bloom. When Sharon first came to the Earl Baum Center of the Blind 10 years ago, she needed help navigating the campus, finding classrooms, the visitor center, the restrooms, and the office. Sharon's pace was dictated by the white support cane that had accompanied her for most of her life. Sharon was born blind, and her formative years were spent in school for the deaf and blind in Utah. Because of her vision disability, they decided that she was too slow to learn, considered her retarded, and spent little time teaching her. Most of her life, Sharon has suffered from the low expectations of her family, teachers, and housemates. However, at the Earl Baum Center, things began to change. Page 36. Although Sharon attended classes, activity groups, and social events, my suggestion that she volunteer to help in the visitor center started the blooming process. Despite a bit of self-doubt initially, the encouragement of other staff and volunteers gave Sharon the necessary confidence to take on this new responsibility. She volunteers 2 to 3 days each week at the EBC, making phone calls, answering the phone, and assisting visitors at the visitor center. She is an active member of the Redwood Empire chapter of the CCB and is serving on the legislative committee and gives reports at the meetings. This spring, she attended Capitol Day in Sacramento and is ready to do it again. Her favorite activity is going to Enchanted Hills Camp, but this year the camp filled up fast and she was unable to attend. Another big change came when I asked Sharon why she had been using a support cane for so many years, as she seemed to be able to walk just fine. She replied, "That's what they gave me." After talking with CEO Alan Brenner, I asked if we could get her some mobility training. It was quickly arranged. She began the summer attending our Matter of Balance class and shortly afterward began mobility training. Now equipped with and trained in the use of a long white cane, Sharon's walking pace is as dramatically increased as her new phone and organizational skills. It's not just her skill levels that have changed. Sharon is a new person. She has absolutely blossomed. I don't think I've ever seen anybody get so excited about a class. She is all giggles and smiles and proud of how much she can now do. After her third class, she announced that she could now probably help with the tours of the EBC. She is able to go all over the campus independently, including our new walking trail. At home, she is now able to go from her house to the gate to pick up paratransit. Soon, she will learn how to get to the dental clinic at the junior college. Page 37. After her mobility class recently, Sharon came into the volunteer office and announced that she really felt good, and she considered this her summer of accomplishments. And just a few weeks ago in November, she traveled to her polling place and cast her own ballot using the new accessible machine. Just try to stop her now. Revival of CCB's Deaf/Blind Committee by David Hanlon. The California Council of the Blind has recently reinstated the Deaf-Blind Committee. David Hanlon, newly elected CCB board member, is a chairperson for this committee. The new name for this committee is CCB Hearing and Visually Impaired Committee, or CCB-HAVI. The CCB-HAVI committee has held two meetings and has set goals to develop a comprehensive plan to improve our service for the CCB hearing and visually impaired members and community, with the invitation to others who are hard of hearing and visually impaired who live in our great state. One goal of this committee is to greatly improve our hearing/listening device system for members who are hard of hearing, not only for the general session, but also we want to have this system available for smaller meetings if so desired. The CCB-HAVI committee is now researching various listening devices systems and will hopefully have a report for the CCB board in January. The system will hopefully be funded with some grant source. Another major goal of this committee will be to apply for grant money in order to provide educational and training outreach for those who are hearing and visually impaired throughout California communities. There is a serious necessity to recognize the needs of members of the hard of hearing and visually impaired community in which we work, play, and function every day. There are a lot of us out there in the baby boomers generation, and in the next 10 to 20 years, more and more people will be facing hearing and visual challenges. We see the challenges as opportunities to prepare to provide technical and educational support for the CCB-HAVI community. If you have any suggestions as to how the CCB-HAVI can accomplish its goals of service to the HAVI communities, or if you can be of service, do not hesitate to contact me or anyone on my committee. My cell phone is 858-610-0825 or email. Page 38. Report on State and Federal Legislation by Frank Welty, Director of Advocacy and Governmental Affairs. State Legislation. The long-delayed state budget for 2010-2011 has finally been passed. While it includes no reductions in blindness-specific program funding, it does include cuts to social services, such as regional centers and the Healthy Families Program, that will affect members of our community. This budget is mostly a stopgap measure, so the next legislature will be facing a similar budget challenge next year. There were a couple of proposals to tax veterinary services and the products sold in veterinary offices, but they were rejected. This is good news for guide dog users. Here's a partial summary of the bills that CCB was following during this session. Page 39. CCB-sponsored bills AB 1787, Swanson, stalled in the Assembly Appropriations Committee. This bill would have required state agencies to include narrative descriptions of regulatory text in notices of proposed regulations. We hope to sponsor similar legislation next year. AB 2430, Chesbrough, passed its assembly committees but was withdrawn from consideration by the full assembly. This bill would have required agencies that exclusively serve people who are blind or visually impaired and that receive funds from the Department of Rehabilitation to reserve 20% of their seats on their boards of directors for people who are blind or visually impaired. CCB hopes to sponsor similar legislation in the future. The following bills have been passed by the legislature and signed into law by the governor. AB 584, Huber, authorizes the county of Amador and the cities of Jackson, Sutter Creek, and Amador to implement neighborhood electric vehicle transit plans. CCB opposed this bill unless it was amended to address the safety concerns of blind and visually impaired pedestrians. AB 1781, Villines, authorizes the city of Fresno to implement a neighborhood electric vehicle transit plan. CCB opposed this bill unless it was amended to address the safety concerns of blind and visually impaired pedestrians. We will work with CCB members in Fresno to encourage local officials to address the quiet car problem in their NEV plan. HCR 162, Beal, Huffman, Hancock, and so on, is a resolution that designates the second week of October, beginning in 2010, as Disability History Week, and it encourages school districts, colleges, state and local agencies, nonprofit organizations, and businesses to engage in disability education activities during this week. CCB originally opposed the bill unless it was amended to describe a more accurate history of the disability rights movement in California. Page 40. We tried with limited success to get such language added to the bill. We will participate in the development of disability history events and curricula to make sure that the history of blind Californians is accurately presented. ACR 177, Yamada, Chesbrough, is a resolution commemorating the 20th anniversary of the signing of the Americans with Disabilities Act. SB 1188 codified into statute the precedent set by a 1978 state Supreme Court decision that a court may not use the disability of a parent as the sole reason for denying custody of a child. SB 1256, Hancock, designates January 23rd as Ed Roberts Day, and it requires local schools to hold appropriate observances. It also designates a number of other commemorative days. SB 1491, Senate Business, Professions, and Economic Development Committee, among other things, allows licensed guide dog schools and trainers to provide in-home training regardless of the handler's experience. GDUC and CCB supported this bill. You may recall that CCB held a successful Capital Day in May. 31 of us shared information with each other, shared a wonderful picnic lunch, and then shared our concerns with our legislators in the state capitol. Thanks again to the Randolph Shepherd Vendors of California and to Art Takahara for underwriting the cost of this event. We intend to hold our 2011 Capital Day on Thursday, May 12, in conjunction with our CCB Spring Convention. We are pleased to learn that RSVC will sponsor our Capital Day lunch. I hope this will be our largest Capital Day ever, so plan on taking part in this exciting event. Please notify Frank Welty in the CCB office if you plan to attend Capital Day. Page 41. The CCB Governmental Affairs Committee has identified the following legislative priorities for 2011. State ID cards. While individuals with California driver's licenses are mailed reminders of their license expiration dates and given the option to renew by mail, individuals with California state ID cards receive no reminders of their card expiration dates, and they must renew in person at their local DMV offices. CCB will work with DMV to eliminate this disparity. Voting access. We have received reports of cities and counties failing to use accessible voting equipment in local elections and of inconsistent levels of compliance with HAVA accessibility requirements in state and federal elections. CCB will continue to advocate on this matter. CCB will seek a state legislative resolution calling on local governments to use accessible voting equipment in municipal elections. Disability History Week Resolution CR 162, which designated the second week in October as Disability History Week, included a distorted description of California's disability history. We will need to work to get a more balanced history included in curriculum content intended for use during Disability History Week. Regulations Format Bill. We understand that Assemblyman Swanson is willing to reintroduce our regulations format bill during the 2011 legislative session. We will work with his office and with other stakeholders to get this legislation implemented, removing the limit on new state accessibility regulations. Section 4459A of the State Building Code states that since 2010, no new accessibility regulations can be adopted. We will seek legislation to lift this restriction. Page 42, Federal Legislation. We have great news from Washington, D.C. Congress has passed the 21st Century Communications and Video Accessibility Act, and with several ACB members in attendance, the President signed it into law on October 8. Some provisions in the bill were weakened as it made its way through Congress, but the final bill is still a big step forward in the area of accessibility. This new law will restore rules that require a certain amount of audio-described television programs. It will require telecommunications equipment to be accessible, and it will provide up to $10 million per year for the purchase of accessible communications equipment by people who are deaf or blind. While it appears that the other bills we promoted won't be passed by Congress this year, our advocacy efforts on those issues raised awareness in Washington, so it is likely that more of our representatives will be inclined to address these issues next year. The annual ACB Legislative Seminar will take place in the Washington, D.C. area from Sunday, February 27 through Tuesday, March 1, 2011. We encourage chapters to send members to this event. Please notify Frank Welty in the CCB office if you plan to attend the ACB Legislative Seminar. You can get detailed information about all of CCB's legislative activities by reading my legislative reports, which will be posted regularly on CCB's website and distributed on our various email lists. You can listen to the reports by calling the CCB's toll-free phone number at 800-221-6359 on evenings and weekends. Check with the California Connection to find out when my next legislative report will be updated. For federal legislative information, please check with the Washington Connection at 800-424-8666 or on the ACB website at acb.org. Please write me at frank.welty@ccbnet.org if you would like me to send you my legislative updates and other advocacy information by email. Page 43, Summary of Fall 2010 Resolutions by Frank Welty. At each of our conventions, the CCB Resolutions Committee puts in long hours preparing resolutions for consideration by the assembled membership. Resolutions are the means by which we set the policies of our organization, so the importance of the committee's work cannot be overstated. Once again, in her role as co-chair, Lena Bandy did a wonderful job chairing the committee meetings and reading the resolutions on Sunday morning. I had the privilege of serving as acting co-chair. Committee members Jean Lozano, Charles Navarette, Dirk Neihart, Linda Perel, and Robert Wendt each made significant contributions to the drafting of the resolutions. We appreciated the willingness of the authors of the resolutions to provide their input during the editing process. During the fall convention, the resolutions committee considered six resolutions. Resolution 2010B1 dealt with Sensory Access Foundation, the State Department of Rehabilitation, and their financial relationship. This resolution was withdrawn by the author. Resolution 2010-B2 urged specific California state officials to direct the California Health Benefits Exchange to address the accessibility of Internet-based health care information resources. Resolution 2010-B3 called on the Department of Rehabilitation to implement a Business Enterprises Program contract with the United States Postal Service and supported the California Vendor Policy Committee's use of a full evidentiary hearing to resolve the matter. Resolution 2010-B4 called upon the California State Department of Education to require that all textbooks in electronic formats which are approved for use in the state's K-12 public schools shall be made available in a format that is fully accessible to students who are blind or visually impaired, and that electronic book readers used in the schools shall be accessible. Resolutions 2010-B5 and 2010-B6 were the appreciation resolutions to the Convention Hotel and volunteers. Page 44, ACB Convention Report Part 2 by Jeff Tom and Donna Pomerantz. Because the vast majority of BC readers also receive the Braille form, which has published a thorough report of the 2010 American Council of the Blind Convention since the first part of this report was published, we will provide a shorter conclusion to this report than you're accustomed to seeing. As an aside, if you are a CCB member and not receiving your Braille form, please let either your chapter president know or call the CCB office at 800-221-6359 so that we can ensure that you're getting one of the benefits of membership in CCB. We begin with Wednesday's convention session, which had ACB Secretary Marlena Lieberg as its presiding officer. The proceedings began with a panel on radio reading services, which opened with remarks from Bill Pasco of Sun Sounds Radio Reading Services in Phoenix. He talked about the many new technologies being used by radio reading services and their capacities to provide services for far more users. As an example, when users can access such a service by a computer or cell phone, significantly larger numbers can be reached than through radio alone. Page 45, Mike Duke, ACB member and director of the Radio Reading Service in Mississippi, stressed the need for consumer involvement to help solve problems and, in some cases, to assist a radio reading service in surviving. Larry Turnbull, managing director of ACB Radio and the final panel presenter, discussed the growing collaboration between ACB Radio and Radio Reading Services. One of the highlights of every convention is a presentation by an NLS narrator and David Hartley Margolin from Denver more than lived up to this billing. His indication that reading talking books was the most challenging and rewarding thing he has ever done just about says it all. There followed a topic that receives far too little attention in our community, physical fitness. Fitness instructor and ACB member Leslie Spoon led the group in stretching exercises. Doug Powell, a triathlete and ACB member from Virginia, gave an extremely fascinating talk on methods that people can use for fitness and resources that could be helpful. Perhaps the most important lesson from his remarks is that we just need to get ourselves started. Progress will come in due time if we just maintain commitment. Californian Ariel Gilbert provided tips on use of local gyms or fitness centers. Talk to manager and instructors to help design ways that you can use equipment and fully participate in classes. She also talked about one of her passions, that of rowing, and the use of accessible rowing machines. The panel concluded with remarks from another Californian, Elizabeth Tumagian, who operates a fitness center specifically designed for use by persons with disabilities. Wednesday's final speaker was a truly extraordinary individual, Aubrey Webson, Director of National and International Advocacy at the Perkins School for the Blind. He spoke about the United Nations Convention on the Rights of People with Disabilities, which was recently signed by President Obama, but which has not been ratified by the Senate. In this regard, he urged us to advocate for the inclusion in all U.S. foreign aid packages for aid to persons with disabilities. Page 46. After taking care of some convention business, Thursday session, presided over by Treasurer Mike Godino, began with a report from ACB's Executive Director, Melanie Brunson. She highlighted ACB's victory in the Social Security case for notices and other information to be provided in accessible formats, a case that involves several CCB members. Mr. Godino then gave his treasurer's report. Although we are in a far better position than we were several years ago, we must work quite hard to ensure that we remain fiscally sound while still able to provide the services essential to the blind and low-vision community. Next, Michael Garrett, Chair of the Board of Directors of ACB Enterprises and Services, a wholly owned subsidiary of ACB, gave his report. He discussed ACB's 7 thrift stores and the work to ensure that they can provide ACB with as much income as possible. Convention Committee Chair Carla Rocheval reported on a number of convention items, including the work of so many on this convention. Her report contained the information that the 2012 convention will be held in Louisville, the 2013 in Columbus, Ohio. President Pomerantz and Jeff Tom, chair of the ACB Voting Task Force, conducted a test of the use of a secret ballot through presentation and a vote on a mock resolution. Essentially, we use the CCB paper ballot method. This experiment was performed in preparation for a potential vote at the 2011 convention as to whether to replace the standing vote with a secret ballot. Friday's session was devoted to internal business. Page 47. Elections were held for the ACB Board of Directors and the ACB Board of Publications. All the elected members of the Board of Publications were reelected. The 2 incumbent members of the Board of Directors were reelected, and 3 new members were elected: George Holliday of Pennsylvania, Janet Dickelman of Minnesota, and Alan Peterson of North Dakota. The majority of the day's proceedings were devoted to the consideration of resolutions. Although this report will not go into the content of all the adopted resolutions, we will mention a few highlights of special concern to those of us in CCB. Resolution 2010-01 directs ACB's Governmental Relations Staff and Environmental Access Committee to include in comments on public rights of way support for a requirement that at intersections where there are multiple accessible pedestrian devices, the audible signal phrase for each signal must be unambiguously identifiable with its particular crossing, and a recommendation that where digital voice recordings are used for accessible pedestrian signals, differing voices be used to differentiate parallel and perpendicular crossings, and the vibratory features making accessible pedestrian signals accessible to pedestrians who are dual sensory impaired be the standard in all locations where accessible pedestrian signals are installed. Resolution 2010-02, introduced through the work of Jean Lozano and other CCB members, puts ACB on record as not accepting the version of disability history that is being offered as truth by other organizations in the disability rights arena, and in particular the notion that the disability rights movement began with the independent living movement in California in the 1970s. It expresses ACB's pride in knowing that the genesis of the disability rights movement involved people who are blind seeking the opportunity to be fully included in our society. It further demands that every state that has passed laws that permit or require that disability history included as part of the curricula of elementary and secondary schools present the significant role played by deaf and or blind people in the disability rights movement. Page 48. The resolution strongly encourages each state affiliate to become directly involved with its respective state departments of education and categorically demand that the role played by sensory impaired people in the creation of equality for all people with disabilities be accurately and fully included in such training. It also instructs a national organization to seek funding and support for the development of a national curriculum framework that can provide to states clear and accurate information that can be used to implement these educational opportunities. Resolution 2010-04, originally based upon the adoption of a resolution by CCB, urges all public and private entities that operate fixed route bus and or passenger rail systems to establish clear written policies for implementing the ADA's requirements of making route designation and stop announcements, and when establishing such policies, obtain input from local stakeholders, including passengers who are blind or visually impaired and other passengers with disabilities who will be affected by such policies. It urges them to incorporate all of the recommendations that have been developed by ACB's Transportation Committee with regard to the policies that govern the calling of bus stop announcements. Resolution 2010-11, again based upon action taken by CCB, directs that ACB urge the entertainment industry to take immediate steps to achieve the following: increased and accurate representation of characters that are blind or visually impaired, more employment opportunities for professionals who are blind or visually impaired, an absolute prohibition on the portrayal of blind or visually impaired characters by sighted actors, and equal opportunities for actors who are blind or visually impaired to both audition for and portray characters not written as blind or visually impaired. It also urges state and local affiliates to advocate in a manner consistent with this resolution. Page 49, Resolution 2010-20, introduced by Chris Gray, puts ACB on record as regarding the repeated failure of Sprint to meet even minimal accessibility benchmarks as unconscionable and unacceptable. It directs the office's directors and staff to communicate our extreme displeasure with Sprint and demands that Sprint take immediate steps to remedy this situation by working with ACB and its Information Access Committee to develop plans that will lead to the availability of an accessible phone option for the many Sprint users who have remained loyal based on the promise made to them repeatedly that Sprint phones would be accessible. Resolutions concerning technology, education, the ADA, and other topics were also adopted. As a former resolutions chair, I would like to specifically acknowledge the fine work and contributions that our own Mitch Pomerantz makes in the resolutions process. The curtain fell on the ACB convention with the banquet held on Friday evening. If you have never attended an ACB convention banquet, you have missed quite a treat. They're always full of surprises, with lots of humor, awards, and excellent speakers. This one was no exception. In 2011, you will have an incredible opportunity. Join us for the best ACB convention ever as we celebrate our 50th anniversary. Convention dates are July 8 through 16, and the hotel is the John Esquaganugget Hotel Resort Casino. Rates are $87, single or double. Add $10 per each additional person in the room. Rates do not include 13.5% tax. You can make reservations by calling the Nugget at 800-648-1177. Be sure to tell the reservationist that you are with the American Council of the Blind, group code GBLIND, in order to receive the conference rate. Plans are already being made for a truly incredible week. We hope to see all of you there. Page 50, Board Minutes by Gabe Griffiths. Summary of the May 6, 2010 CCB Board Conference Call. President Jeff Tom called a meeting to order. The entire board was present. There was a motion and discussion to call board members' names prior to officers during a roll call vote, but the motion failed. The pre-convention board minutes were passed with the inclusion of recess and reconvening times. Also, it was pointed out that the hotel recommendations sent to the board prior to that meeting were made irrelevant due to the number of changes made in the various bids. It was decided that it is unfeasible to hold more than the two open board meetings a year. These are the two pre-convention board meetings each spring and fall. It was decided that the sweepstakes ticket sales would have a first prize of $500 and that there would be a live auction held after the fall convention banquet. It was moved to rescind the vote to hold the spring 2012 convention at the Burlingame Crowne Plaza Hotel. This motion failed on a roll call vote. It was decided in executive session to enter into litigation against JetBlue and Cinemark. The meeting adjourned at approximately 9:30 p.m. Summary of the June 29, 2010 CCB Board Conference Call Minutes. Page 51. President Jeff Tom called the meeting to order at approximately 7:40 p.m. There were two absences. The reading of the May meeting minutes was tabled to a later meeting because not everyone had had a chance to read them. It was decided to request the Publications Committee to prepare a report on the feasibility and included costs of producing the BC in a format compatible with the new NLS digital players. A request for a proposal has been prepared and will be sent out to approximately 99 hotels for the fall 2011 convention. It was decided to rescind the vote taken at the spring pre-convention board meeting to change vehicle donation companies and to return to VDPC. It was then decided to provide the board with monthly financial information from the treasurer. The meeting closed at approximately 9:20 p.m. Summary of the September 20, 2010 conference call. President Jeff Tom called the meeting to order at approximately 7:30 p.m. There was one absence. It was decided to hold off the vote on the May, June, and September meeting minutes until the pre-convention board meeting in October. It was decided in executive session to enter litigation against GGNRA and the National Park Service. Due to chapters needing to hear some financial considerations, CCB Treasurer Chris Gray will be the MC at the President's Dinner in the fall. Dan Kaiser invited anyone with ideas for external fundraising to let him know. He will have a full fundraising report at the next board meeting. There was another discussion regarding formats for the Blind Californian that will be continued at the fall pre-convention board meeting. The fall convention information will be put on the website as soon as possible. It was also announced that the information in the board packets will hopefully be to board members a week prior to the pre-convention board meeting. The meeting adjourned at approximately 8:20 p.m. Page 52. Advocacy 101, Lecture 3, Advocating for Access by Frank Welty. I believe CCB will only succeed in improving life for blind and visually impaired Californians if we mobilize our members throughout the state to advocate on behalf of our community. This column is designed to provide our members and chapters with the tools they need to become more effective advocates. The Spring 2010 Joint Convention Session of the CCB Committee on Access and Transportation and of the California Council of Citizens with Low Vision featured a highly informative panel presentation on advocacy issues. The presenters were Lainey Feingold, Margie Donovan, Kim Charlson, and Brian Charlson. The recommendations listed below were taken from that presentation. The audio recording of this program is available on the CCB website. That website is ccbnet.org/conventionarchives.htm. Find the heading for April 16, 2010, and select the link to listen to or to download the joint CAT and CCLV session. Through our history, the California Council of the Blind has advocated successfully to improve conditions for blind and visually impaired Californians. In the past decade or so, we've successfully participated in structured negotiations to address access issues in a variety of situations. Our work has made automated teller machines and retail point-of-sale terminals accessible to blind and visually impaired consumers. Page 53. Various commercial websites are now more accessible to people who use screen reading software. We now have better access to credit reports, bank statements, and utility bills in accessible formats. And the City of San Francisco now has over 100 intersections equipped with accessible pedestrian signals. We have rightly recognized the work of our attorneys in achieving these outcomes. However, the vital role played by individual advocates is not as well known. Each of us can advocate for greater access. Here are steps you need to take to make your advocacy a success. Identify an access barrier that you feel strongly about. Commit yourself to working to remove that barrier and find others who share your concerns and are willing to help. Brian Charlson is an avid fan of the Boston Red Sox baseball team. He learned that while Boston's venerable baseball stadium, Fenway Park, had accommodations for wheelchairs, there were no such considerations for guide dog users. Brian made up his mind to do something about this problem. Now, as a result of his efforts, Boston baseball fans and their guide dogs are more welcome in their local ballpark. What's more, the relationships that Brian established with Red Sox officials put him in a better position to advocate when he and other visually impaired baseball fans took up the cause of making the Major League Baseball website more accessible. Margie Donovan and others weren't satisfied with their lack of access to bank ATMs. The efforts of these individuals to solve this problem laid the groundwork for the structured negotiations that have resulted in the thousands of accessible ATMs that can now be found throughout the United States. Advocacy begins with education. Learn your access rights. If you don't know much about the Americans with Disabilities Act or the Air Carriers Access Act, and you don't know what it means when people talk about things like Section 255 or Section 508, start educating yourself about these laws. Page 54. If you don't know about the technologies that can make our environment and various sources of information more accessible, seek opportunities to try out these new products. The more you know, the better advocate you can be. Education goes two ways. When you encounter an access barrier, think of it as an opportunity to educate those with whom you do business about access issues. For example, if you go to a store where you can't comfortably use your ATM card because the point-of-sale terminal at the checkout counter has a touchscreen and no keypad, so you can't punch in your own PIN number, let it be an opportunity for you to nicely explain to the cashier that this is a problem and that California law requires stores to include accessible keypads on their POS terminals. Most of the time, the first person you talk to will be in no position to solve your problem, so cheerfully ask to explain your dilemma to a supervisor. Then, patiently and persistently work your way up the chain of command until you get in touch with someone who has the power to fix the problem. If you need to communicate in writing and don't feel confident composing an appropriate letter, feel free to ask me to help you write it. Once you've started your advocacy, carefully keep records of your activities. If you're dealing with a particular retail establishment, save sales receipts so you can prove that you are a loyal customer. Keep a log of your contacts, including dates, times, the name of the person you talked with, and the outcome of the conversation. Save copies of correspondence, including email messages. These records are particularly important once you get up to the corporate level. Page 55. All advocacy requires follow-up. So be politely persistent. It will be your responsibility to follow through on complaints. After making your first complaint, give your contact person a little time to respond to you, but don't wait any more than a month before you make a follow-up contact. Then continue to regularly communicate with the company until you've resolved your problem. Don't let your emotions control your behavior. Angry outbursts and other rash actions won't help your cause. As you are working with the company to find a solution to your access problem, remember that you're not advocating just for yourself. Try to take the needs of others into account. While one particular solution may work for you, it may not work for other people with disabilities. Try to think of what would help someone who is totally blind, someone with low vision, someone with difficulty hearing, someone with limited hand dexterity, and so on. This can best be accomplished by getting people with a variety of disabilities involved in your negotiations. Find others who share your concerns and passion and enlist them in your campaign. the more you can involve other advocates in your project, the louder your voice and the stronger your advocating position will be. Seek out someone in the company who can champion your cause. At some point in this process, you'll know if it's time to bring in a disability rights lawyer. Your personal advocacy activities are necessary to lay the groundwork for any legal action. You may have to make several contacts with the lawyer to get him or her to take up your case. Again, be politely persistent. CCB has worked with our attorneys, Lainey Feingold and Linda Dardarian, on many successful structured negotiations. You can contact Lainey by email at lf@lflegal.com, and her website is lflegal.com. You can call Linda at 800-822-5000. Page 56. Once the lawyer has taken on the case, you must stop all direct contact with the company involved in your dispute. Let your attorney handle the problem. Give your attorney copies of all your documentation and forward all correspondence from the company to the lawyer. During the negotiation process, you must be available to the lawyer as a resource. Be available to demonstrate your problem and test possible solutions. The process takes time. For example, it has taken an average of from 1 to 2 years from the time that a person has begun trying to get accessible POS terminals installed in a particular store until the store chain has finally put in the terminals. After the settlement, you will probably be called upon as a subject matter expert to help monitor the company's compliance with the settlement's terms. Finally, once the problem has been settled and a new level of accessibility has been achieved, it is important for all of us in the blind community to take advantage of that access to justify its existence. Also, when we encounter companies that do things right, make it a point to thank them for the good things they do. If you'd like to learn more about the subjects discussed above, feel free to call me at the CCB office or send me an email at frank.welte@ccbnet.org. Also, I send regular email bulletins to interested advocates. Let me know if you'd like to receive these bulletins. CCB Officers and Directors, 2010. Editor's note, we're indebted to Bernice Kandarian, who updates and corrects the list of CCB officers and board members, including the number of the term each is presently serving, the year elected to that term, and the year next up for election. Terms actually begin on January 1, following election. We shall publish the list this way, at least in issues just preceding and following elections, and routinely if members wish. The presence of an asterisk or star means that the individual served a partial term before the first full term. Page 57. President Donna Pomerantz, 10 to 12, first term, Pasadena, California, 91106, phone 626-844-4388, home, donna.pomerantz@ccbnet.org. First Vice President Eugene Lozano, Jr., star, 10 to 12, second term, Sacramento, California, 95841, eugene.lozano@ccbnet.org. Second Vice President Roger Peterson, star, 10 to 11, partial term, Mountain View, California, 94040, 650-969-1688, home, roger.peterson@ccbnet.org. Secretary Gabe Griffith, star, 09211, second term, Concord, California, 94521, 916-505-8780, and gabe.griffith@ccbnet.org. Treasurer Peter Pardini, 10 to 12, first term, Mill Valley, California, 94941, 415-990-9202, cell, peter.pardini@ccbnet.org. immediate past president, Jeff Tom, from 2011 on, Sacramento, California, 95831, 916-995-3967, cell, jeff.tom@ccbnet.org. Board of Directors, Jerry Arakawa, 09 to 11, 4th term, Culver City, California, 90230, jerry.arakawa@ccbnet.org. Lena Bandy, star, 10 to 12, 1st term, Monrovia, California, 91016, 818-987-4325, cell, leena.bandy@ccbnet.org. Ardis Bazin, star, 10 to 11, partial term, Burbank, California, 91504, ardis.bazyn@ccbnet.org. Foster Brown, 09 to 11, first term, San Francisco, California, 94127, 951-907-5872, cell, foster.brown@ccbnet.org. Page 58, Vincent Calderon, star 10 to 12, second term, Pasadena, California, 91106, 626-429-4539, cell, vince.calderon@ccbnet.org. David Hanlon, 10 to 12, first term, 858-610-0825, cell, DAVE.HANLON@ccbnet.org. David Jackson, 10 to 12, third term, San Francisco, California, 94127, 415-239-1873. DAVID.JACKSON@ccbnet.org. Dan Kaiser, 09 to 11, first term, Sacramento, California, 95814. 916-444-7753, home, dan.kysor@ccbnet.org. Linda Porrell, 09 to 11, first term, San Francisco, California, 94112, 415-577-8437, cell, linda.porrelle@ccbnet.org. Publications Committee. Bernice Kandarian, Chair, Mountain View, California, 94040, 650-969-3155, bernice.kandarian@ccbnet.org. Judy Wilkinson, Editor, San Leandro, California, 94577, editor@ccbnet.org. Winifred Downing, San Francisco, California, 94122, winifred.downing@ccbnet.org. Evelyn Drury, Ramona, California, 92065, evelyn.drewry@ccbnet.org. Donna Pomerantz, Pasadena, California, 91106, donna.pomerantz@ccbnet.org. Bonnie Rennie, Santa Ana, California, 92705, bonnie.rennie@ccbnet.org. Catherine Schmidt-Whitaker, Diamond Bar, California, 91765, catherine.schmidt@ccbnet.org. Susan Schulter, Saratoga, California, 95070, susan.schulter@ccbnet.org. Lynn Layard, Large Print Layout, Berkeley, California, 94705, lynne.laird@ccbnet.org.